The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So which one was she?
Sexual.
Yeah. Which really just means intimacy. Yeah. Right? It sounds way more ooh la la than it is.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, I hope I'm that too. I'm a woman in my 40s. What can I say?
You're in your prime. You're in your
I'm
prime.
I'm in my prime. That's what I've read,
that's
at least.
Right.
I mean,
it's true.
I hope so.
Everyone's got their thing.
Yes, yes, yes. Happy Fanatics Day. I am one of your hosts, David Magadoff. The only David Magadoff on Earth, by the way.
And I guess that leaves me as the other host, Claire Kramer. And that's interesting, David. I think that I am the only Claire, C-L-A-R-E, Kramer. I'm not the only Claire, and I'm not the only Kramer. In fact, I know that this may be of interest to you, even though your name is not Claire.
It's not, but you know what?
But
anything's possible.
Anything is possible. Maybe it's Clarence David, you know, and you've just been moonlighting as a David all these years. But there's actually...
We all have secrets,
There's
Claire.
So many Claires that in Clare, Ireland, every year there is a Clare Con for people whose name is Claire. And for the last decade, there's another Claire I'm friends with who spells her name C-L-A-R-E, Claire Grant, who is Seth Green's wife. And for the last decade, we've said, you know, we're going to eventually pilgrimage as two Claires over to ClaireCon and have, you know, a celebration
pint of Guinness.
Of sorts.
Well, I'll come. I'll put a wig on, and hopefully no one will notice.
No wig required. No
clear
wig
it up.
We are equal opportunity Claires.
Thank you. Well, my wife, Sarah, she always wanted to have a Sarah party, but she's Sarah with an H. So I get that. She's like, does not believe that Sarahs without an H are real people. This is my wife, everyone, not me. So if you are
know,
Sarah.
She's the one with an extra letter, might I remind her and all the Claires with I's. You know, we keep it simple.
Fair enough.
C-L-A-R-E, S-A-R-A, you know?
Minimalism.
David,
you're going for minimalism.
You can't really shorten David, though. I mean, Dave, but that's like a totally separate name.
Well, speaking of minimalism, someone with also a very short first name is Keiko Agena. This is our guest today. You know Keiko.
Yes. You know her from 13 Reasons Why, which a very uplifting show. Better Call Sal, another uplifting show.
Yes.
And Dirty John, the first. She's done a bunch of stuff.
Prodigal Son. And of course, Gilmore Girls, which is an uplifting show, truly.
That's like
no
the
joke
OG of, you know... teen shows.
Guys, we have Lane on today. Lane from Gilmore Girls, everyone's friend. This is someone who, my wife at least, I know, she just grew up and loved Gilmore Girls. I watched that reunion show. It became the show where I would watch over my wife, Sarah, with an H's like shoulder. And then I was eventually like sitting and like next to her and watching it. And I really enjoyed Gilmore Girls. I only have watched the final season and have thoroughly enjoyed it. Is that weird?
I mean, I don't know. I think it's normal. It was a popular show. I actually haven't seen it, and my teenager has not started a rewatch of it. I mean, when she does, I'm sure I will, you know, watch. But I feel like Gilmore Girls is one of those shows where, like, literally everyone in young Hollywood was on. Kind of like you were either on, like, of course, I'm going to project and say you were either on Buffy or Gilmore Girls or, like, Dawson's Creek. Like, those were, like, the three that everybody kind of, like, had a part of in young Hollywood.
that was young Hollywood teen show. And she was great. And she was, everyone loved Lane. And I in the short time I got to experience Lane, understand, she's just like Keiko. She comes on screen and she's so kind and she's got a big smile and she literally is your friend, and which will make more sense as we explore the Enneagram with her today. I'm not even going to tell you what that's about. It's about personality type stuff. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to love it. We're going to have a real deep dive into the Enneagram with Keiko today. But it really makes sense once you hear all about what Keiko's Enneagram is and how she relates to life.
I'm excited. Let's take a listen.
Well, hello again there, Keiko.
Hi, David. It's good to see you.
Hi, Keiko.
Hi, Claire.
This might feel like deja vu for us. This is definitely not deja vu for our listeners, although we've had a wonderful conversation with you about the Enneagram. We get to do it all over again and maybe hit some things that we didn't hit the first time. But can you explain to everybody what the Enneagram even is?
Oh, sure. So because of this podcast, the first thing that comes to my mind when you ask me what I'm a fan of or what I'm addicted to is this thing. The Enneagram is a personality system. I think probably most people will know a personality system like, what is that thing called, like INFJ?
Yes.
And the Myers-Briggs? It's similar to Myers-Briggs, but it's another system that has nine different types. And you're either one of those nine different types, but it gets more granular the more you get into it. And there's a lot of diversity within it, but it's basically nine different primary types. And I love it. And so that's, it informs almost every aspect of my life
intriguing. So, yeah. Because I had not heard of Enneagram before. And now, you know, on our second deep dive into it, when you say it informs every aspect of your life, I really want to know what you're talking about there.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, where do I start? Like, okay, in just a casual way, I will always be thinking about what the Enneagram number of a person is in any situation. So if I'm sitting there on the couch with my husband watching British Bake Off, we will at some point ask, like, maybe not every episode, but we will definitely try to figure out, like, what Enneagram number each person is. It's how I, God, this is sounding a little intense, but it's almost become part of my POV, like how I sort of view, it's a filter of how I sort of see the world.
It's your own matrix. You're Neo, and you can now see the matrix. But that makes sense. It's like a graph that you put over life, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit. It's a tool set. Probably maybe like a little bit of a language or something.
Did you use it when you started dating your now husband?
You know what? Sure. Yeah, because we were into it before, my friends and I were into it before Shin and I started dating. Yeah, but I was wrong. When we got together, I was wrong about what I thought his Enneagram number was.
So what was your aha moment, though? So like to make you go like, oh, I'm living my life, yeah. La, la, la. And then someone introduces you to the Enneagram. What do you remember how that happened, that introduction was? And that made you go, oh, what was the first moment when you went, oh, this is interesting?
Yeah, well, there was a couple of moments. The one is the hot flashes that you get when you realize that you're reading something, you're like, oh my God, that is too accurate about myself. Oh. And then the other one is when I just thought about my mom, like it just hit, that's what made me really not go back to forgetting about it, is that when I realized, oh my God, my mom is a number that's different than me. And I just saw the way that she processes the world. And it gave, instead of being, I hate to say this, but instead of being irritated with her about her idiosyncrasies, I went, I have those defense mechanisms that's a certain skill set. She has defense mechanisms that is her own skill set. It's just the way she's dealing with the world. It's not, it just made me understand what she's doing and have more compassion.
Empathetic. You got very empathetic with your mom.
Yeah, that was the big aha. For sure.
That's hard to do with your mom. Well, so that must be something.
so many times with a parental relationship, it's, you know, I know for myself, that's a very complicated mother-daughter. The relationship is very complicated. And so many times I'm left to being like, oh, I guess it's a generational thing, you know? So I think it's really cool that you're able to put this graph and understand that way. And now I want to try to do that with my mom. But going back to your husband, what do you mean you were wrong about his number? And when and finding his right number, did that make you fall more in love with him? Or what? Tell me the story.
Well, we were married already for a while. And so I know we haven't gotten to this specifics about the Enneagram, but I thought he was an 8, which is a challenger kind of person. And he exhibits a lot of those things. But when he flew home, he was flying home to Japan for a visit without me, to visit his family there. And on the plane, he took the book with him. And he was reading, trying to understand his mother. Well, there's a lot of mothers in this. But and he was reading about the 4, which is a completely different personality type. And something struck him so hard that that's what she was. And then in that same like hot flash moment, that actually that's what he is. Like the things that probably annoy him the most about his mom kind of hit him. And when we started talking about it, yes, he is a challenger on the surface, and his dad was definitely an 8. But when you get when you go a little deeper and found out what was really motivating that front-facing aspect of it, it did make me love him more.
How often is someone mislabeled?
That's a good question. I mean, probably a lot, and that's also why I don't ever say I know someone's Enneagram number, even if I've known them a while. I say I think. I always preface it with I think, because I think, like, we all know ourselves better than we knew ourselves 20 years ago, and it's always unfolding.
I thought I was a 7 for like a week, and then I learned I was a 2, because apparently 7s look like 2s. By the way, Keiko, can you, because I like this Enneagram stuff. Keiko,
can you tell more than a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that's another podcast. But can you go from 1 through 9 and just sort of do the quick, like, at least just for people listening, what are these numbers stand for? You said an 8's a challenger, but 1 through 9.
So 1 is a perfectionist, 2 is a helper, 3 is an achiever, 4 is an individualist, 5 is an observer, 6 is a loyalist, 7 is an enthusiast, 8 is a challenger, and 9 is a peacemaker. And they have different labels depending on which book you read. But so that's one. Of the book that I'm most familiar with, that's the main word that they use for each number.
And then you can be even more specific thing, right? You can be a wing,
yes.
Right? So you can be a 1-9 or a 1-2 and all those. Right. Do you know those off by hand as quickly?
I don't know. But I do know that you are both 2-3s, right?
You are. Claire and I
learned that with
in the first episode.
3 wing.
Yeah, I learned that from you guys. I mean, this is all brand new to me.
But what the crazy thing is, you learned it in the same way that I learned it, Claire, that we were during a period of in our lives when we are both doing the thing that is in a sense the name of what it is. So the name of the 2-wing 3 is called the host.
Oh,
and
yes.
So
it's just
hilariously,
so funny.
I remember I learned this when I was hosting my first show on MTV, and then you learned this while you were hosting the podcast.
Like literally.
And it makes so much sense.
It's creepy, right? Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So when you meet someone, as you mentioned, when you're watching the Great British Bake Off. But let's say you're intermixing with, you know, a new person in your personal life. Do you let them know you're analyzing them? Do you ask them, or do you kind of just play it in your own head and in your own mind?
Yeah, I'll play it in my own mind. And then depending on how long we get to know each other. Mm. So if it's a one-time meeting, no. But if it's someone that I know over any length of time, it'll definitely come up because I'm curious. So it's not so much me telling them their number, but it's me asking them so many questions, a series of questions to kind of discover what.
Do you feel like it's like you're hacking into a friendship?
Yes.
That's how I feel.
Yes. Totally. Don't you feel like, and maybe this is the addictive part of it that's maybe not healthy. I don't know, but I feel like I know them better.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a certain level that I can know someone before I know their number. And then it kind of drops deeper.
Okay, so let me ask you this. When you're bringing someone on to the Keiko team, whether it's, you know, someone professionally or, you know, even someone who does your hair or something like that, someone you're going to have a long-term relationship with in some capacity, do you, let's say, hypothetically, they're a seven and you're like, I just don't work well with sevens or, you know, whatever. Do you ever apply that sort of, you know?
No, because, and David knows this too, is that it's that, it's so all of the numbers have good aspects and bad aspects. So it's not about not liking a number or not being compatible with a number. Yeah. So the highest, if someone is any number and they're a healthy version of that number, then it's going to be easier to get along with them. And any number, if they're an unhealthy version of that number, is going to be difficult to get along with. So it's not necessarily the number itself. It's whether, you know, how healthy we are.
Right. So let's go back to when you first read this about yourself, your own number. You know, that's where you said the moment was where you're like, I'm going to carry this system on with me. What was that like to read your personality through this, you know, lens?
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that are funny and then there are some things that are really personal. I mean, there are some things where so I'm a six, which is a loyalist. And loyalists are very concerned with feeling safe. Like, that's their primary objective. And most humans are, but I think
they always say sixes know where the exit is in any room. Yes. That's what they always say.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. They have and if they're dating somebody, they always have if my husband's going to cheat on me, if my boyfriend's going to do this, I 100% have an exit plan. I know where the bag is. I know who I'm going to. Yeah. This is what I've been told about women sixes.
No,
I don't know if this is a general statement.
No, sixes have plans within plans within plans and layers of security measures. I mean, I have many different, like, my financial plan is so specific and, like, so layered. Like, I have things put in many different places. I have many emergency buckets, let's just say that.
So is it more important for you and for people in general to use this, as you are in this situation, as an inward-facing tool to understand yourself or as an outward-facing tool to understand your mom, for example?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think one of the dangerous sides of the Enneagram is the lure of thinking that you can understand someone from their number. It's very dangerous, and especially when you're starting to learn it. You know, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. So if I start to say, oh, well, they are this number, I know about that number, and that's why I know so much about them, and I can write them off or whatever. You know, more of it the more in life we can make things internal tools as opposed to external tools is better. So, yeah, I would say so. Unless you're using it with compassion at the forefront of saying, let me try to understand this and have empathy with the person, then great. But otherwise, try to use it more on yourself.
So as an artist, when you're approaching a character, do you do the Enneagram of the character?
Yeah, like as Drissa right now, like, do you know exactly who she is on Prodigal Son? Like, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I knew her. Well, this is what's interesting too, though, is because to start, you know, when you work on a character, you have this idea, especially if with the luxury of a television show, you can discover. Like, a play is something different, or if it's a one-time thing. But with a television show, you actually kind of are discovering a little bit. So you start with an idea, and then over the course of what's written for you, you gain more information. So I had a general idea of who she was, but every script that comes in, you fine-tune it a little bit because you're learning also about who she is. But there was a moment when so she's a five, but I read the more like, well, what wing she is, what...
And what's a five again? Wait, what's the word that goes with five?
Oh, five is the observer.
Okay.
Yes.
They're like the most heady Enneagram. Like, they really love input and they love taking in information. And they're arguably maybe the smarties of the bunch, I guess.
Yeah. And then but when I found out, because there's the, I forget what the name of it is.
Yeah, which wing? When did you know she's a 5'4" or a 5'6"?
You know what? It wasn't so much the wing, but it was the, what do you call those things that where it's the, David, you might know, but the self-preservation, the social.
Yeah, self-preservation, social, or, yeah. There's So can you define those three things for people listening?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
So within, besides the health level, which will present different aspects, and besides the wings, whether she's a five that leans more towards a six or a five that leans more towards a four, there's these three variants. So there's a social, sexual, and a self-preservation. Mm-hmm. And when I read that paragraph of who she is, I was, and this was after months of working with her, my jaw just dropped because it nailed her. Then it actually felt locked in. I sort of understand, I understand her a little bit better, I think.
Mm-hmm. So which one was she?
Sexual.
Yeah. Which really just means intimacy. Yeah. Right? It sounds way more ooh la la than it is.
Yeah. Right? I'm like, I hope I'm that too. I'm a woman in my 40s. What can I say?
You're in your prime. You're in your
I'm
prime.
I'm in my prime. That's what I've read, at least. Right. I mean, it's true. I hope so. What is the most surprising application you have used of the Enneagram in your life?
Most surprising. That's a good question.
Like you read it and it was like,
oh,
like I know there are definitely aha moments for me too, where it was like, oh shit, I didn't know the thing that I kept doing these last 30 years of my life is written in this book.
Oh, that kind of thing. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I will tell you what surprised me and was a practical tool for me is that I always assumed that I should be to do better in my life, I should be very goal-oriented and I should write lists and vision board and that sort of thing. And that's a lot of information that's given to most people. That's not surprising, you know, like let's all, if we want to succeed in life, this is the pathway, be goal-oriented, mm-hmm. do that. For my particular a number, it's not necessarily the right move for me. So for someone mm-hmm. as anxious as I am and who genuinely is a hard worker, the most efficient thing for me to do is to actually become more like a nine, the peacemaker, and to chill the fuck out. Can we swear on this podcast?
Yes, okay. Of course.
Especially you.
Swearing is a sign of high intelligence.
Oh,
so,
excellent.
Yes.
Yeah. And so once, and then that changed a lot because I get, not everybody's like this, but I get in my own way. I say no to things because I'm such a Debbie Downer and think that the world's going to fall apart. So if something comes to me that's an opportunity, I see the problems before, you know, right away. And so the best thing that I need to do is to chill out, breathe, even step away from the computer or just say a maybe, relax, then just say yes and just, you know, and just go with the flow will actually help me much better than the other side of things. So,
well, it's interesting because with the visioning, you know, the vision boards and the lists and the notebooks and there's a lot of, you know, sounds like for you, there's a lot of pressure that you put on yourself to like, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, it has to be done perfectly, or maybe I'm going to manifest something that's not right, you mm-hmm. know, and so it makes a lot of sense when you apply that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so the Enneagram also, and these I don't have memorized, but each number has an ascending or descending slide. So for my number, the six, at my highest, I go towards a nine personality type. At my lowest, I go towards a three. So the three is the achiever.
Like, another way to say that is when you're feeling like when you're feeling good and healthy, you actually exhibit good traits in another number. And when you're feeling kind of low and stressed, you might show the negative traits of another number. Right. And each number has a number towards health and towards stress, just to add to the math.
What's the two? Do you know?
Two, because we're helpers, when we're feeling good and healthy, we actually look like fours, which are very good at self-care, because fours are kind of the quote-unquote individualists and the ones who care more about themselves. So we actually look, when a helper person is really healthy, Claire and I, at our healthiest, are probably laying down getting a massage at a massage table.
Yeah, taking care.
And not doing anything for anybody.
Yeah.
And at our worst, or when we're really stressed out, Claire and I are both people who are look like apes at their worst, which is challengers. Mm. So we can be very, dare I say, Trumpian in that we can be very, because he's an eight, and be very angry and challengy and very protective of our brood and very protective of the people that we are and kind of lash out. That could be us.
That is interesting. And I'm definitely, I mean, when we get to the gateway into this, I'm going to be ordering your favorite book, Keiko, off Amazon. But you brought up a really interesting point. And let's diverge from using Trump as an example, but let's pick someone that the entire world knows. Let's just say like Martin Luther King Jr., you know?
Right.
Does everyone agree on his Enneagram number who knows this system?
David's nodding. Would you say everyone?
He's an eight. He's an 8-7. He and Trump, not six, but they're both challengers. They both took a completely different way going down their paths. But
isn't that Martin Luther King is an eight. That's got to be like the most perfect explanation about what we're talking about it's not the number. I mean, both of those men are eights. It's just
but that's also interesting, Keiko. What you're saying is it's not the number that defines you, it's what you do with the number.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Absolutely.
So how does that come into play? Can you describe that a little bit more?
So most people know, you know, when they're not at their best or when they're, you know, what they kind of tend to go to. And so this is also why the Enneagram number is kind of a fixed-ish thing, because it's our defense mechanisms that we use when we're very young. So it's our first tool set. So it's the thing that we grab the strongest. When people are at their best selves, it's actually more difficult at their peak. It's actually more difficult to tell what their Enneagram number is. Because they're not using their defense mechanisms so strong. They're able to fluidly move through the entire Enneagram. So this is a personality system. And actually, when people are maybe unhealthy, it's a little easier to lock them into what their number is because their defense mechanisms are so obvious. And when you're a little bit softer with yourself and you're a little more open and you're healthier, you can say, okay, well, I'm not necessarily comfortable doing this, having this strength, but I'm open and I can kind of move fluidly to the strength of this number or that number and kind of exhibit a lot of different strengths. I think that's how I would answer that.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Hey, Keiko, when you have we already talked about your character in Prodigal Son, but like, do you enjoy doing this with the characters? That's not your own Enneagram. Like, was Lane your Enneagram on the girls of Gilmore, or were you the similar or not?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is that.
And is it fun? And is it fun to play someone who's not you? Are you kind of like, ooh, this is neat?
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. If we're going to get, here's some my husband likes to say he's not here. Hashtag real talk.
Okay.
Thank you. Finally.
So, hashtag real talk is like, let's be honest. Most actors have a comfort zone. Most actors play best in their, in some version of their number. Tom Cruise is a three. Like, you know, Tom Hanks is probably a six, like a buddy guy. I mean, so, you know, why is it that we come back to them and they great actors can play the gamut of that, whatever that thing is, but there's something in them that is a little bit, the core of that character is a little bit like that. Not to say that you should stereotype people and pigeonhole people and they can only play their number. Because I'm not a five, but Edrys is a five. But there's, if I'm really honest, so this is the hashtag real talk, most of the characters that I play are sixes. Or some, and it's not that those aren't the characters that I audition for. I audition for a lot of stuff. But the things that nail hardest are some, the basically the roles that I book are usually tend to be kind of six-ish. Now, Idris is a five, but she has a very strong six tendencies as far as loyalty and attachment and hard work. There's a lot of six in her. So it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing about acting. I'm of the opinion that I'm not one of those people that think that you can play anything well. I mean, you can say the words of any person. That's not, you can say the line words off of a script. That's anything. But can every actor play every role well? No. And even Meryl Streep, no.
Do you think there's a truth that comes out when you're playing, like, you felt like with Lane, you felt like, was that more of a truth for you? Like, was Lane a six, essentially? Is that what you're saying? Or you're saying, I don't know.
Well, here's the problem. And here's the here's the problem is that the way I play Lane is a six.
Mm-hmm.
So gotcha. Is Lane a six?
Oh, so you'll just sort
but
of
that's why different gotcha. Actors are hired for different roles. I mean, it's very right. circular what you're saying. You know what I mean?
It's a little, yeah. It's a little, and it's not that we can't play other roles, but what are the roles that they're going to hire us for? It's a competitive freaking business. You have to nail it. Mm-hmm. You have to be better than 100 other people. So what's going to give you that edge? It has to hit rock bottom in you. And part of what is rock in you is, you know, this number.
Does Enneagram pair well with another, like the Zodiac signs or the I Ching yeah. or what does it pair well with? Is it like a fine wine and this cheese goes well with it? Or is it just something to be used only on its own?
Oh my God, I wish I knew. I don't know any other of those other things.
I'm going to send you the David I Ching. The I Ching is what I do.
Send it to me.
There's a bar in London that has created cocktails based on Enneagram numbers. We all have to
go. Yeah, I'm into that.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that so much.
Well, Keiko, you said you bring your number to any role then, even if it's a different number. And I think that's really cool. Like,
But is that, well, in any case, we won't go down.
It's bringing like, yourself into it. Listen, I don't even, you know, as much as I love the Enneagram, it's fun talking to you and how you approach your characters with an Enneagram number, because I rarely am thinking about my Enneagram number with the characters that I do, but I think that's a really beautiful thing, and I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, as an artist, it's like whatever tools you can put in your tool belt that actually make sense, because there, you know, there's so much that doesn't when you're dissecting a character. That's always really helpful. And what is the entry point for someone like myself? Who, I mean, I've written down here, I'm a two wing three. When I'm in good health, I look like a four. And when I'm not, I'm an eight. But what do I do with this information? What book do I get? Where do I go to start to like implement this into my life?
Okay, great. And I know that David also has this book. But I'm going to take out my book so I don't. Yeah, here we go. So I don't mess up the authors. But it's The Wisdom of the Enneagram. Okay. You can get it on Amazon. Don Richard Riso and Russ Hudson. They've written a lot of different books, but this is my favorite. And you know, one thing that I haven't followed that much, but on Instagram, supposedly there's like these joke things that where you can follow that are Enneagram related. I think that might be fun for people. Although maybe it's only funny if you already know.
It gets funnier.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Maybe it's one of those things.
Like, kind of like me. The more you get to know me, the funnier I am. That's good. Okay. I'm going to look up that, like a meme Enneagram. That's fun. Yeah.
Actual Enneagram. That's one of my favorite Instagrams.
Oh, okay. Good.
It's called,
good one.
It's just called Actual Enneagram. It's a lot of comedy with it, but it's like, ha ha ha. Ooh, that hurts.
Like life. I love it.
Cool.
Keiko, what did we ever get to ask your entry point into the Enneagram and who introduced it to you?
Oh, I was introduced to it by a man named Steve Horniak. And it was, I remember what year was it? I know we talked about this before and but it was before Gilmore Girls. It was very early to when I, so 90s, late 90s or something. Because I moved here.
Someone once told me that the Enneagrams had like a few incarnations. Like it's like having a moment again the last few years, and then it had a moment in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then it had a moment in the 70s.
Right.
So I like it sounds like you kind of got into the 90s way.
Yeah, at the end of the 90s, yeah. But it wasn't as popular when I got into it. I didn't know a lot of people that knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there are more people now, maybe that I can talk to about it.
That's great. And so, you know, What would be your love letter to the Enneagram if you just to end this on this sweet thing? Like, why do you love it? Like, if you had to say. Like, Enneagram, I love you because you've done this for me, or this is why.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Enneagram, I love you because you have given me a sense of understanding of myself and a sense of understanding of other people. You've helped me creatively to be a better actor and a better writer. I think the most important thing that you've given me is a way to further my empathy towards people, especially my mom and people that are very close to me that I had at some point felt maybe a challenge understanding. And so I thank you. Thank you, Enneagram.
I love it.
It's beautiful. And thank you, Keiko. You're awesome.
And thank you,
awesome.
David. And thank you, Claire.
I can't wait. I really can't wait to like look, order this book. And my first like action item is going to be trying to understand my mom, because that's so important. I want to come to peace with that. You know,
yes.
That's the best application I can think right now. And then also maybe because I have two daughters to use that in that both ways, you know? So it's that's the most important thing I'm taking from this is like just being able to understand people in your personal life who you know, I didn't marry my mom. It's a relationship that you don't choose, you know?
Yes.
So it's really important to be able to drill it down to some common ground. And I feel like that's what Enneagram is going to do for me. So thank you, Keiko.
Yeah, I have chills. I have goosebumps. Yes, that'd be great.
I love it. Okay, so first of all, I love Keiko. She's amazing. Second time, twice as nice. But you know what I just realized during this episode, David?
What, Claire?
Thank you for asking what. I realized that I need a budget for this show because here I am on Amazon cruising around ordering the wisdom of the Enneagram. I've ordered, you know, every episode we do, I get so into the people's subject, you know, the people's draw me in and I go and I spend $20 to $40 on Amazon or, you know, at Home Depot or wherever acquiring these things so that I can share in the love of the Enneagram, the Moleskine notebook, some cookbooks. You know, fortunately, I haven't had the chance to buy a Ford Bronco yet, but.
Can we make a separate Patreon just for you? Should I just do like, all right, everybody, we're going to do the Claire Kramer Patreon because she needs a budget for all these good things that we keep learning.
I mean,
and need, not want. This is a need.
It is a need. I love it. I mean, this is why I love this show so much because you get to celebrate what, and for us, we get to educate ourselves, you know? I mean, I wouldn't have picked up intrinsically a Moleskine notebook. I wouldn't have intrinsically known about the Enneagram. And now I just can't wait to get it and apply it, like I was saying, to my relationships. And I'm all in. That's my problem.
We have an expensive podcast.
It's my problem when I play poker, too. I just go all in.
It's a pricey podcast. It's a slippery slope. And we'll be in the gutter at the end of it after 5 seasons of this. But you're going to have like no house, no home. But you're going to have a really big bag full of a lot of cool tchotchkes.
I love it. You know, it is interesting that we're both the two wing three, and that is called the host. Yeah. When you said that during the episode, it hadn't occurred to me that was the name of us. How do we find each other?
Isn't that creepy? Then we're hosts, and here we are. It's just that's the universe is speaking. And
do you have another two wing three in your life, or am I the only one?
You know what's funny is
it's not funny if you have another one.
No, what's funny is I don't actually know a lot of two threes, and twos are usually ladies. It's just a funny thing. Of all the numbers, twos tend to be women, and fives tend to be dudes. And so my wife and I are kind of opposites. So because twos are helpers, and I think there's a natural intrinsicness to like. Women are more caretakers, nurturers, helpers, givers than men. They're also better than men in lots of other places, in my personal opinion. And
remind me to call back to one thing, but continue.
Yeah. But so, yeah, I'm one of the rare two men that I know, but I do know a couple. Like, we're just a rarer bunch for whatever reason, you know. And a lot of them are gay, and I'm not. And I always wonder, maybe I am, but I'm not.
A lot of two wing threes?
A lot of two wing three men I have met are more of a are gay men than they are straight men. And so, yeah, that's just
what is going on.
That's just a fact.
I can't wait to get my book. I was going to say, though, that, you know, you're not wrong about women being nurturers. What's the old thing? But they did just find a skeleton from the Ice Ages of a woman who was hunting and gathering. And so that dispels the myth that they've always been the homemakers. And even hundreds and thousands of years ago, women were going out and making shit happen and
that's
getting
right.
So, boom.
That's right.
That I'm sure she was a two-wing three also.
Oh, yeah.
Or an eight.
She's a badass. Whatever she was. She was all the numbers. She was a 10.
Yeah, she was.
Speaking of 10, you are all 10s. Thanks for listening, as always. Check us out on all the places one can get podcasts. Find us on the internets in the ways that make sense. Keep listening to the end of this podcast. We'll share everything with you that you need to know. Good luck. Good night if it's the evening. Good morning if you're just waking up. We'll see you soon.
And we do need to talk more about that sexual wing or whatever that was called at a later date.
We will. Oh, we will. If you guys want to know what it's like to be a fanatic about fantasy books, I know I do, then you should listen to our podcast next Thursday because we have Mr. Will Friedle. Yes, Eric Matthews of Boy Meets World, you're welcome. And of course, Kim Possible, Batman the Animated Series, and the Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh my gosh. You guys ready for this? I am.
Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at wearefanatics.
Yes, that's We Are F-A-N-A-D-D-I-C-T-S. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Colin Baker. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.
Boy, that's a lot. It's not the your gram, my gram, definitely not the Instagram. It's the Enneagram.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yes, the Enneagram.
Enhance your listening experience with Wondery Plus. Enjoy ad-free listening, exclusive content, binges, and more. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.